Welcome everyone to the sixth episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in very snowy Helsinki, Finland. I'm one of your hosts, Luis, and with me is your other host, Jonas.
Hello everyone.
In this sixth episode of the show, we will talk about some interesting games, and in the advent of the BGG Hall of Fame, we will also start creating the Board Game OK Fantasy Collection. We will not talk about the BGG Hall of Fame. We thought about maybe talking about that, but we decided like we will just stick to the reviews. And we will review three really amazing games, Seven Empires, Undaunted Normandy, and El Grande. So that being said, Jonas, why don't you start us with the very first review of the episode, Seven Empires?
Seven Empires is a spiritual sequel to Imperial and Imperial 2030 by Mac Gertz. Seven Empires was released in 2024, and it takes the basic formula of the Imperial games by having players buy shares in different empires that battle for world dominance. Or in the case of Seven Empires, we are battling for the dominance of Europe in the 18th century. The seven empires of the game are Great Britain, Kingdom of France, Prussia, Russian Empire, the Habsburgs, Ottoman Empire, and the Kingdom of Spain. A game of Seven Empires consists of eight rounds, during which every empire takes one action, and every round ends in this event phase. When it is your turn as the player, you take an action as the majority shareholder of an empire. If you are not a majority shareholder in an empire, you take an action as another empire where you are a minority shareholder. This is already a difference compared to the other imperial games, where you only take an action as a nation or empire if you are the majority shareholder, meaning that you have the most stocks out of all players in that one single nation. Okay, so if you take your action as an empire, what are the different things you can do? You can build and move your units, you can battle, you can build cities and palaces for the empire, and finally, you can score power points as the empire. Whichever empire has the most power points in the end gives the biggest return to its shares, while the empire with the least amount of power points gives the least amount of return. I have now played Seven Empires three times. One five-player game and two three-player games. The five-player game was with you, Luis. How did you like Seven Empires?
It's fine. I don't know. It's like, I don't like presentations, so I don't like PowerPoints. That's a joke. When do you mean majority shareholders? Wasn't it so that in this game you have influence points or something like that?
The game talks about influence points. You kind of like getting influence inside a nation. However, in practice, these influence points works as shares or in the same way as in Imperial.
I only played Imperial 2030 once, so I don't remember exactly. Seven Empires I've only played once, so I remember more accurately. I thought it's fine. I think it's one of those games that like a player next to you can just like mess up your game if you're not careful. And then you have to think like seven steps ahead if you really want to be good in this game, which is not maybe my particular forte or strength. So I found it like a little bit hard to just like, okay, if I do this, if I take this influence, what is other people going to do? And therefore, I don't know. It was fun for sure. I would like to play it again, but I'm also not dying to play it again. I thought it was fine, but I've heard that you have been more interested and more enjoying the games.
I have truly been enjoying Seven Empires. Imperial 2030 is a game I played two times. I also really like that game. If I would think about which one do I prefer more, Imperial or Seven Empires, well, let's think about the differences. In Imperial 2030, you have money management. So you kind of have to like make sure that you have enough money that you can buy those shares. Mm-hmm. And then the different nations have their own coffers, which you also have to kind of take care of so that that nation is able to buy units and factories. Mm. However, there is no money in Seven Empires. The shares, the way they are bought is during those event phases that happen after every round. So basically, in turn order, every player gets to pick one share from a given empire.
Yeah, so you don't need to care. Like, yeah. So you can just basically choose any of the noble people or share or influence guys.
And the thing I like about Seven Empires and Imperial 2030 is this idea that you have to kind of like, well, you don't own any army, right? And that means that you kind of have to watch what the other players are going for, who are they investing in, and then trying to form alliances with those players, making sure that you have shared incentives with the other opponents. But at the same time, trying to play it so that in the long run, you will come on top compared to others.
Yeah, I played. Have you played Startups by Oin Games? I think you have, right? Like, we were playing, this is a very simple game, almost about shareholding and stuff, where you kind of need to incentivize other people to work with you in order for you to succeed. If you're getting all of the shares or all of the influence with that single nation, nobody will want to help you or nobody will want to do things with you, right? And that felt a little bit similar in Seven Empires, where like some people started getting a lot of influence with some of the empires. And then at some point, it's like, ah, what's the point? Like, if I do this, then I'm just going to benefit Jonas, who has the majority of France. Like, again, like, if you don't think 7 steps ahead, then at some point you're kind of stuck with like, okay, I'm just working with this person. And now this person is the weakest in the game and they're not going to help me at all. They're just going to hinder me. And that's what I felt like a little bit frustrating halfway through the game, where I'm like, ah, damn, I didn't understand. And now I'm stuck in this position where I'm just getting pummeled and hurt from the north and from the east. So that's kind of like that I didn't enjoy that very first play. I didn't hate it. I just didn't love it either. So maybe if the second time I play, it would be a little bit better. But
thinking 7 steps ahead, I don't think it's possible in this game, nor I don't think it was possible in Imperial 2030. But there is this thing that you kind of have to like think ahead. If you take this position with these empires, what does it mean in terms of the board state? What are the interests of other players? How are those incentives going to change? I think you made a good example of kind of like over-investing in one empire. You never want to be the only shareholder in an empire, because that means that you are the empire that others will attack.
Mm-hmm.
And when you kind of like start investing in one empire, then you want to look around. Okay, what other empires is this one empire neighboring? And seeing that one of those neighboring empires, kind of like the majority shareholder of those empires, has already invested in a little bit of your empire as well, or like where you are the majority shareholder, it makes the game a little bit more relaxed, because you already know that they might not attack you and you can work this out.
So I'm not saying this happened in our game, but like where a crazy player or a player that doesn't understand the rules or a player that doesn't care can really mess up the experience for everyone. I don't think it happened in our game, but I also like the 7 steps ahead, I'm not only saying about buying the shares, which is part of it. I think you have to consider like, okay, what shares are available, which I think becomes more important after like the second time maybe that you pick empires. But even the second pick, not the starting empires, but the second pick can be really fundamental. If you mess up, you might like put yourself in a worse position.
Yeah.
But I meant also like that the actions, right? Like you have these actions that you can only pick out of the 3 that are available, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
So it's like also if you don't plan that well ahead, it's like, oh, damn, I need to build or something, or I need to attack, and that action is not available for the next 2 turns. So
if we talk a little bit about the strategy as the minority shareholder, that's the thing that you can kind of like use to mess up the game for the majority shareholder by picking an action that shareholder would want to use later, but you're going to pick it now. Therefore, it's going to be locked for the next 3 rounds, so you're not going to get to it.
Yeah.
In addition to that, you can look at player turn order, meaning that after the shares have been divided, okay, who's going to be the next player after that? That's something you also have to pay attention to.
Yeah.
And if we talk about finding yourself in a ditch or trying to dig yourself out of a hole, you cannot sell shares in Seven Empires.
Mm.
That's the same as it was in Imperial and in Imperial 2030. There's no selling, only buying, which means that whatever empire or nation you invest in, you have to make that work. You have to build those alliances with other players. If you don't, well, too bad. You're going to be stuck with junk.
Yeah, which is the problem with the game. Like, you make a wrong decision, especially maybe the first few games, then you're not going to win. which, eh, I guess doesn't matter that much. But I think that that's what happened on that first game. Like, I think I overinvested in France and Ellen overinvested in Spain. And then nobody kind of, later people invested in those, but then there was no really way to work together. Like, maybe we could have invested in each other's empires to do a bit better, maybe. Whereas you had like, oh, a little bit of Russia and a little bit of the Habsburgs and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So you were like more mobile. You still didn't win, but you were like, I think, enjoying the game a bit more than I was.
Absolutely. Let me mention a couple things about the specific empires. The empires seem very asymmetrical in the three games that I have now played. France has had a rough time in all of those games, whereas Russia has been a complete powerhouse. If you are listening to this as a Imperial fan and you're wondering whether you should get Seven Empires, or if you don't own any of the Imperial or Seven Empires games, here's my buyer's guide for Imperial and Seven Empires. Pick the theme that speaks to you the most. There are differences in the games, but these games feel more like variations of the same core game. So if you feel that 18th century Europe is your thing, go for Seven Empires. If you want to play out this extremely cynical, futuristic, Swiss bankers controlling the world powers, Illuminati style game, pick Imperial 2030. That was Seven Empires by Mac Gertz.
Moving on to our next review of the episode, we have Undaunted Normandy. This is a game designed by David Thompson and Trevor Benjamin in 2019. This is a partnership that basically has designed all of the Undaunted games and some other games for Osprey Games. This is also the first game on the Undaunted series. I actually got this game because I have heard a really good things about Undaunted Stalingrad, and I have gotten it in the secondhand market on Undaunted Stalingrad. But before I played it, I wanted to test things out to see if like whether I could sell it again or I would keep it. And then I got Undaunted Normandy, and that's the only one that I have played. Undaunted is a deck-building game for two players set in World War II. There is some combat and some tactical elements, but the game revolves around managing your deck in the most efficient way. The game is the Germans versus the US armies. It's based in scenarios. So in each scenario, you will have different units available to you depending on the game. Some games are very symmetrical. Some games are quite asymmetrical, where like you have some completely different units than the other army. And there's different objectives. The objectives can be, at least the objectives in this Undaunted Normandy, can be control a certain number of objective points, which is just control locations that are valued different numbers, and or pin down your enemy, which basically means like take down all of their riflemen, like don't let them control more units. Those are the only two objectives. Depending on the army, depending on the scenario, you will either have the same control objectives, or one of the armies will have a objective of controlling and the other one will be to pin down, basically eliminate other enemy units. And depending on the objective and the units that are available to you, the game can feel quite different. So basically, each unit is represented by two things: number of cards that you can add to your deck and a combat token on the board. There are different squads. So there's squad A, B, or C. Depending on the scenario, you can have all of the units of squad A, or some of the units of squad A and some of the units of squad B, or all of the squads, but then just some of the units. So for example, Rifleman A will be represented by a combat that's a unique token on the board, which is the unit, which is the number of people, and Rifleman B will be a completely separate tokens. And then each one of the cards will be the ones, you take a card that is a Rifleman A, will allow you to move and interact with that Rifleman A token, no matter how many cards you have. So you might have three cards Rifleman A on your hand, and then that would allow you to move that same token three times or do something different with that same token three times. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Each one of these cards will allow you, or each one of these units or cards will allow you to do different things. So for example, Rifleman allow you to move, attack, control, which is how you get objectives, while Scouts allow you to move, but by scouting, allow you to conceal, which means making your enemy's deck a little bit worse by adding these cards that are useless, which are called Fog of War, or allow you to reckon, which means like take away Fog of War cards from your hand, which means making your deck a little bit more efficient. Yeah, there is obviously combat in this game. This is a World War II game, and I think that is the most divisive part of the game. I think I have played this game maybe 10 times, but out of those 10 times, I've played the first scenario 5 times with different people. And I think it really depends. So the way you play the combat is that you have a unit that has a base attack value, which is a number of dice that you will roll. So, and it's very thematic because a sniper, for example, allows you to attack with 3 dice, which allows you to maybe have higher chances of hitting. Whereas a sniper man only lets you attack with 1 dice, and gunman lets you attack with, if you're attacking with 2 dice, or if you're suppressing, which is a little bit less deadly, you can throw 4 dice, which is higher likelihood of hitting. Each unit has a defense value, a base defense value, let's say 5. And to that, you add the location where you're at, which is like if it's a location very open, it will have a defense value of 0. If it's a location that has a lot of forest, it will have a defense value of 3. Or maybe a hill will have a defense value of 3 as well. So you add your base value to the defense value of the location where you are. And to that, you also add how far away you are from the target. So for example, that can be 5 plus 3 if the location is very well defended. That's already 8. And the dice that you roll is a 10-sided die. And you have to hit or have a higher number than the defense value. So already, for example, 8, which is very common to have in the very beginning of the game, if you're quite far away, you would only hit with an 8, 9, or a 0, which is the 10. However, you might have defense values that are, if you're very close to the opponent or if you're in the same location as the opponent, the location doesn't have any defense value, you might need to hit with only a 5. But you're still only rolling 1 dice. Right, like if you're attacking with a rifleman or with another unit that doesn't have that much attack. And this can be very punishing if you're just rolling bad during the game. I think the only person that I played with that hasn't liked this game, it was a situation where I was rolling pretty okay or pretty well, and they were rolling really bad. Like even with snipers or gunmen, like rolling 4 dice, having to hit a number 7, which is not that maybe unlikely with 4 dice, they were just not hitting me. And therefore, it felt to them that like the game sucked because they were just not able to do anything. Obviously, like luck is part of dice rolling, but probability makes like maybe the luck go down a little bit and that I think is one thing that can make this game feel a little bit more punishing or a little bit better. If you're rolling really good or if you have good luck or whatever, then good rolls can make you succeed in maybe unlikely odds, which bad rolls can make you succeed in very likely odds, which can, if you have the advantage, you have really good units that hit really well, but you're rolling really bad, that can still put a dent on your strategy. Basically, based on the combat result, if you hit an enemy, then the other player has to get rid of cards, or if they don't have cards from their hand, they have to get rid of cards from their deck. And if they don't have cards from their deck, then they have to remove the token from the map. And this can mean that you can really easily affect what other people are doing based on like who you're hitting or who you're not hitting. That is the gist of the game. Like also in the game, you only have 4 cards that you are playing with each round. And one of those cards you have to use to dictate initiative, right? So like you play one card, if it's like a platoon sergeant or a squad leader has a higher number of initiative, which can make you take the initiative. And in this game, having the initiative can be significant because, for example, you might have a card that is a rifleman, but if I attack your rifleman, then you lose it from your hand. So if I go first, I can really hinder your plans. If I go second, you might actually hinder my plans. Anyway, I think this is a fantastic game that can really offer a lot of replayability. It's like really easy also to play. It doesn't feel like really the rules, or at least the rules overset doesn't feel that heavy. Once you play it a couple of times, you understand everything super easy. I played the other weekend with a friend and we played 3 or 4 scenarios, like one after the other. He was really enjoying it. He was not the friend that was rolling really bad. So yeah, this is Undaunted. Normandy, Jonas, you played it with me. What did you think about the game? What did you think about the luck and the deck building elements of it?
The deck building elements are fun. The luck, I don't mind at all. You said you played this 10 times, and is it like 5 of those times was with a person who was new to the game?
Yeah, like so basically I played the first scenario with 5 different people. One of them you. Whereas like maybe I have played it more than 10 times, but like at least I have played the first scenario 5 times that I know.
Sure. And I'm pretty sure that I was not the first person you played with.
Correct.
Yeah. And I think the fact that you have the dice makes the playing field a little bit more equal. You know, I came new to the game, but I still felt that I had a chance of beating you. I can't even remember who won, but I think it was very close, the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And the dice do play a part.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it can feel bad if you roll bad, but if you're not as experienced as your opponent, you still know that you have a shot. Because you can always try to see, like, well, maybe with this rifle, man, maybe I will kill your sniper.
Yeah. Yeah, that is completely true. And I think the rules are quite simple, that anybody can play this. Like, you don't need to be super strategic. Obviously, the more you play, I guess the more you can internalize, like, what does it mean? Maybe I need to put more Fog of War cards in your deck. Maybe I need to remove. To be fair, I'm really bad at this game. I got obliterated. My friend who had just played it the first time, I think every single scenario, he won. So I'm like, I'm not the best at this game, but like, I think it's a really, really, really good game. And I can't wait to find somebody that would commit to play Undaunted Stalingrad, which is like the campaign / legacy version. I think it's just campaign, not legacy version of this game, which a lot of people have said really good things about.
That's funny that you mention it, because when we played Undaunted Normandy, I did not say this out loud, but I was thinking to myself that, oh man, should we get Stalingrad? Because this is already fun, and I can imagine that campaign game to be a lot of fun. However, you know, time is the most valuable resource, and we play a lot of other games, and I feel that, well, I don't know if I can commit to a full campaign game.
Okay, okay. So, well, you're not invited, like, I'm not invited to your Hadrian's Wall games. No, yeah, I don't know. It's still there. I haven't touched it. I haven't opened the box. It's not a new game, but like, it's still there. So at some point, maybe you'll change your mind, or I'll find somebody to play Stalingrad with. And in the meantime, I'll just have to introduce it and play the first scenario, which is the easiest one, with even more people. All right, that is Undaunted Normandy. Our last review of the episode, though not the last thing we will talk about in the episode, is El Grande. Designed by Wolfgang Kramer and Richard Ulrich, it's a game from 1995 and recently had a new edition in 2023. But anyway, this is an area majority game, which is played in 9 rounds. After every 3 rounds, there is a scoring phase. And every round basically, I'm already explaining the game. So, and every round basically has 2 phases or 2 steps. The first step is you play a card. You cannot, and you play it in turn order. You cannot play the same number that another player has played, and the highest number goes first. And this is the first interesting decision of the game, because the highest card goes first. Each card has a number and a number of caballeros, which is just like tokens or meeples that you can bring to your board or to your good supply or to your court. The higher the card, the less caballeros he has printed. So like 13, 12 doesn't have any caballeros printed on the card. And then 1 has 6 caballeros printed on the card. So the highest card goes first. The higher the card, the less caballeros you can bring to your supply, which obviously if you don't have that many in your supply, then you need to play lower numbers. And the lowest card plays first the next round. All of these 3 things are things that you have to consider while playing your card. Obviously, you cannot play a number that has been played. So sometimes you maybe want to play a 6 because it's a good card. And then the people before you have already played the 6, the 7, and the 5. So you're like stuck in like, okay, I might as well play an 8 or might as well play a 4, whatever. So if you need more caballeros, you also might not want to go first. You might want to play a 1 because you really need caballeros in your supply. But if you really need to go first or you really want to go first, then you really need to push it to like a higher number card. So that is the very first really interesting and important decision in the game. And then the second phase after playing those cards is the action phase, where you're playing actions. And there are 5 cards available in the supply, which are the action cards, and they go from 1 to 5. And basically, each action card allows you to do 2 things. First is take the special action of the card, which each card will be different. And the second is play a number of caballeros from your supply to the board. So the number 1 cards will only allow you to put 1 caballero there. The number 5 card, which is always the same, which is the king card, will allow you to put 5 caballeros on the board. So again, combine that with the first thing, like, do you want to go first? If there's really good actions on the board, you for sure want to go first in order to at least prevent people from doing maybe hurting you in the game. And if there are really bad actions or actions that you don't care, then you want to go maybe last. Also, you can either put your caballeros first or do the special action. And the actions are all about like moving your caballeros, moving caballeros from the board, getting rid of caballeros, scoring different areas. So it's like all about like the mechanics of the game, which are basically revolving around, again, putting caballeros on the board in order to have the most caballeros on areas. And whoever has the most caballeros in each area will score the majority, then the second player, and then the third player. Both decisions are super interesting. Like the first phase, like which card to play, which is maybe super, it's actually also super fast. And then the second part, we're like, okay, which of the actions that are available to me, which might be like, if you're the first player, it might be the five of them. If you're the third player, then you might not have that many actions available. But still, like, do I want to go for more caballeros? Do I want to put more caballeros on the board? Or do I want to go for a little bit of better action but have less caballeros to put on the board for the area majority? And last but not least, the castle. I think the castle is a gimmick, but a fundamental gimmick of this game. Whereas if you don't want to put caballeros on the board, or you can't because the king is not in the place where you want, and I haven't talked about the king, that's maybe neither here nor there, you put caballeros on the castle, and once you put them there, nobody knows how many caballeros are there. And obviously after three rounds, you might forget even yourself how many caballeros you have there. You will not remember how many caballeros other people put. So you kind of maybe know that you have five, but maybe you have six or you have four. You kind of know that Jonas has four or five. So that's also like, okay, should I put caballeros on the board or should I put caballeros on the castle? And every scoring phase, which happens every three rounds, the first thing you do is that you reveal the tower or the castle. You see how many caballeros are there. And then you score for also area majority of the castle. And then all of those caballeros move to the board, to a pre-designed area that you choose secretly without letting other people know. And then after that, you score every single area of the board, depending on the caballeros that you had on the board and the caballeros that came from the castle to the board, which also can change significantly. At the end of the game, whoever has the most points wins. And that is it. That is the El Grande, without a doubt, the best area control game in existence. It is very simple to understand, very simple to play. I maybe butcher the rules a little bit here, but once you start playing it, it's super easy. Even sometimes the people don't, I've seen that people don't understand the difference between like the good supply and the bad supply, or the court and the province, or some people don't really understand like the castle and how that game, but like as soon as you just explain it and show it once, it's like, ah, okay. And it's super simple to play, fun, engaging. You can play with people from every area of, or every level of expertise in Borderlands. You can play with hobby board gamers, or you can play with people that have never played board games before. This is a fantastic game. You played it, Jonas. What do you think about El Grande?
El Grande is probably my favorite area control game. People talk about area control versus area maturity. In El Grande, you score per maturity, meaning that I can have my pieces in your region as well. We can share that region. But if I have more pieces, I will get the bigger score. You will get the second most, or the second biggest score. I think this element has a big effect on the nature of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Since both of us can score, well, one of us will score more, it just means that there's less of those feel bad moments, which I think is a thing that most people bounce off from area control games. Yeah. They don't want those feel bad moments where their whole army is decimated and there's no way for coming back.
Yeah, and I think last time I played, that's exactly how I won. I think I had a majority in one area, but I had presence in many areas where other people were fighting for the absolute majority instead of like, hey, what happens if I go a little bit here and a little bit there? And I think I basically won by having a couple of like majorities, but then having influence and getting second place and third place in many different areas. So yeah, really good game. Talking about area majority and area of influence, this is, I think, considered the 87th area majority game in Board Game Geek. But I find that is super weird because you have like Star Wars Rebellion, Spirit Island, Eclipse, Scythe. All of those are considered area majority or area influence games.
Well, they have the mechanic in them.
They have the mechanic, but still, like, they're not, that's not their main thing,
exactly.
Right? Like Scythe. Is Scythe area majority or influence? No. And it's still like, yeah, it's number 18. Like it's winning because it's there. Like I found that super disrespectful to El Grande.
Oh yeah, and we're talking about BGG rankings, right?
Rankings. We're like, yeah, like I think this should be considered the number one area majority or area influence game, but because there's other games that are ranked higher and have that mechanic, it just gets put like Spirit Island. Do you consider Spirit Island area majority or area influence?
No, I consider it co-op.
Exactly.
It's a co-op game.
Exactly. Why is it even in that location? So something to not discuss maybe in this episode, but maybe categories and game descriptions in BGG, something for the future. Jonas, I have a little bit of trivia for you.
Sure.
Related to El Grande, you know, you have Wolfgang Kramer, which is a name that I think is quite recognized in the hobby.
I think it is a recognized name. I think it's Kramer.
Yeah, it's Wolfgang Kramer or Kramer. I don't know how you pronounce it. I hear it in the normally spoken by YouTubers and English speaking. So it's always like Kramer, and in particular, the duo of Kramer and Kiesling is mentioned quite a lot. The K and K duo. So a little bit of trivia, Jonas, and for people that are listening at home or in their devices, the name I think is really famous and really recognizable, but I think he is a bit vaguer of a designer. So like you recognize the name, but can you tell me, can you name five games that Wolfgang Kramer or Kramer has designed?
Okay, I think I can do this. Number one, Six Nymphed.
Six Nymphed is correct.
Okay. Then he did this whole Mask series or the Mask trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Kramer and Kiesling. So that's Tikal, Mexica. And oh, what was the third one? I don't even need to know because I already have three down.
Okay.
This is a more newer game from these two designers, Renature.
Mm-hmm.
Kramer and Kiesling.
I didn't think you were going to talk about that one.
And which am I going to pick as the fifth? I could say Paris, which is a game by them.
Mm-hmm.
I could say Puebla, another game by them. But I think I'm going to say Abluxen or Linko.
Oh my God. I think you are more familiar with Kramer than I thought you would be. I could not have named you, I don't think, more than two games of. And I was just asking about Kramer, not just Kramer and Kiesling, by the way. Because I think Six Nymphed or Abluxen might be only by Wolfgang Kramer and not Kiesling.
I think that might be right.
Yeah. But yeah, you name all of them. The one that you were missing was Cusco from the Mask series. And then there's a couple others that are apparently very well, both by Kramer and Kiesling or just by Kramer. Cold Baron or Cold Barons, or it's a series, I think. Palaces of Carrara, which both of them are a little bit older games, I think.
Yeah, Palaces of Carrara I have played. Some people say it's a little dry, a little boring. I find it extremely engaging.
Never played, I think. I think the only game of these that I played is Abluxen or Linko with you and Six Nymphed. I don't think I have played. And of course, El Grande by Kramer. And then recently they had, or at least Kramer had, Wandering Towers, which is a game about like hiding the wizards in the towers and then you move the towers.
That's
I think
true.
It was also talked about quite a lot 2 years ago. So there we go. Like you were able to, I thought you were not going to be, I was going to humiliate you because I would have been humiliated. So that was my little bit of trivia. I hope people were also at home maybe able to name some of the games by Wolfgang Kramer or Wolfgang Kramer. And that is the end of El Grande review. And now let's move on to the fantasy collection, which is the topic of the episode.
Fantasy collection.
This is, well,
I heard fancy collection. No. I think this collection will be fancy.
No, fancy or fantasy?
Fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. I said fantasy.
Did you say fantasy?
Yeah.
I heard fancy.
Well, I think it will be fancy. But Jonas, why don't you tell us, why are we doing this?
Why are we doing a fantasy collection?
Yes.
There are older games, such as El Grande, that we want to talk about on this podcast because we really like these games, right? We want to talk about why these games are so great. But then it doesn't, there isn't necessarily enough reason to discuss these games because they're not relevant necessarily, as in like they're not new, they're not the latest hotness. Mm-hmm. But there's like I think we were thinking like, okay, what would be a nice way to bring these games into a conversation that could be relevant?
Mm-hmm. But did we say that we the fantasy collection was only going to be like older games?
No, we did not say it's only going to be older games. Another reason why we are doing Fantasy Collection, or what I think, well, let me not try to guess too much what you are going after. Another reason why we are doing the Fantasy Collection is to recognize some games that we both feel very strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you like to call a game fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of fun with a lot of games. But which are the really good ones? Like, which are the great ones? Which are the ones that we want to highlight to mm-hmm. our listeners?
Yes, yes. And that is the reason. And also, like, if we had a collection shared, like if we had to start a collection from scratch, these are the games we would try to put in that collection, right?
Yes.
And these are the games that we both would like, that we would be happy to have, and we would both be happy to pay and keep. Because at least what we decided was like that the Fantasy Collection is games that we both like. So it might be that there's a game that I really like and you're not liking. I think, or I wanted to bring games here to the table today with the very likelihood that you will veto them. Mm-hmm. So that was my thinking about the games that I'm going to bring today. Because I was like, okay, maybe we're just going to put three games and the three games are going to be coming from Jonas today. But I'm also willing and able to veto your games today. So the way we're going to do this is like, Jonas is going to start with us. He's going to mention one game. All of the games that we will talk about today are games that we have talked about in the podcast because we didn't want to make this super long. So we restrict ourselves to games that we have talked about in previous episodes, either on lists or we have mentioned and we have described already a little bit so we don't have to describe them in this. And then we're going to have a discussion whether or not this can go in the collection.
And both of us have the right to veto the suggestion, right? Both of us need to agree that the game goes into the collection.
Correct. Yeah, we both have to agree, and either of us can veto the mentioning, and there's no limit to the number of vetoes. There's no limit to the number of games that can go, at least for now. We're not limiting the collection. I think we mentioned that maybe we will limit it at a certain number of games eventually, but right now we're only, at most, adding six games to the collection. So there's not going to be any restriction for now.
Did you think more about what is the setting where our fantasy collection lives?
This is the way I thought about it. And maybe I'm a little bit crazy, but like it was like, if we had an office and we dedicated ourselves to, this is super stupid, but we were hiring our services to cater events for third parties that we would offer this collection to, and we would be able to explain and people could have different like levels of fun with this collection, that's the collection that we would build, kind of. Like this is a collection that we could be recognized for and that we would recommend to everyone. And you and I also would be happy to just play games from the collection, any type of games from the collection. That is kind of where I was going with this. Also, as you say, some games are games that are maybe under-recognized or that like people don't really talk that much about. They're not like the newest hotness or at least the hotness. So I like, yeah, like these are games that are like, yeah, if you haven't played this game, you have to play this game. So that's kind of where I was thinking. I don't know if all of the games that I'm going to be presenting today are going to represent that, but that is maybe the setting that I was kind of thinking. What were you thinking?
I was imagining in my mind a situation where we both would move to maybe another country and we would be, for some reason, working together. We would move to a new country and we would be roommates.
Ah.
I didn't quite figure out like how would our significant others play out to this because I don't want us to pick games for Mia or games for Chilla, right?
Yeah.
Is this going to be me and you and whoever we meet, new friends that we will meet in this new environment?
And new girlfriends.
Nope. Even in this fantasy setting, I will stay faithful to Chilla. So I was thinking about the games from the perspective of like, okay, if we go somewhere new, we don't have our regular gaming group, which means we need to find a new gaming group.
Yeah.
And we need to have some kind of variety in our collection because we have to be ready for any type of setting. We need to be ready for our pub evening.
Yeah.
We need to be ready to host people over.
Yeah.
We need to be ready when no one comes over and it's just me and you and we want to play something together.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think that evokes a similar feeling that I have that the collection will entail. So, all right, Jonas, why don't you start us with the first game that is going to be proposed to the fantasy collection of Board Game OK?
Yep. I'm looking at my list here of the candidates and I'm thinking like, what would be the first game to possibly introduce to this, to our collection of Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's my pitch. We need a game that is playable with a wide player count. We can play it at 3 players. We can play it at 4 players. We can play it at 5 players. Maybe even at 2 players.
Mm-hmm.
And a game that's going to be pretty easy to teach to others. And it's going to be always an enjoyable time. And it's also going to buy us some street credibility in the new meetups that we're going to be going to.
Mm-hmm.
So, Luis, how about Ra by Rainer Knizia? I think the general consensus is that this is his best auction game. I know there are people who have other favorites, but I think commonly this is the most favorited game.
Yeah. I was thinking about putting this on the list. However, I don't own Ra. So I haven't played it enough. So I felt that I would be doing a disservice by mentioning. Like, I know a lot of people talk really good about it. I had a super enjoyable time the one time that I played it. But I think I would need to play it more in order for me to be able to present it.
Oh, no. Yeah, I didn't think about that. You've only played it one time. So are you saying that, like, you know that it's popular, you know that critics love it, but you don't want to be a poser saying like, oh, other people say it's good, therefore I'm going to also...
No. So yes, I didn't want to be a poser, so I didn't want to mention it myself because I considered it. I saw the list. Like, I saw like, oh, this is a really good game. And I felt like, yeah, I can play Ra anytime, but I don't own it. I don't bring it to the board game. You never bring it to the board game meetup, so we never played. Also, it's a game that I've been considering buying because it's for up to 5 players, which is a fantastic number for my other, like, sometimes when I'm meeting other people or playing with other people. So I think this is a game like that ticks all the boxes for me. I would play it a million times. I will definitely be putting in the collection, though I feel a little bit like a poser. Mm-hmm. if we agree, but I'm completely okay. Like, if you are standing by that, I'm like, sure. Like, I will stand by your decision and I will back it up.
Nice. You will not be disappointed. So Ra will be the first introduction to our fantasy collection.
Whoop, whoop.
There's no better game to start this collection with.
All right. So hear me out, Jonas. This is the very first game that is going to be proposed by me. And now, you know what? I'm going to make it easy. My first game that I'm going to propose is a game where, like, we are tired, we're alone, our significant others are not there, nobody joined us, and we just want to play a really good game. And the game that I'm going to suggest is Seven Wonders Duel. I think this is a fantastic, and you will be asking, like, not Lord of the Rings Duel. I thought about it really hard. I think people will complain if they hear this episode. They're like, why the Lord of, no. Seven Wonders Duel, for sure the better duel. It is a fantastic game. It is full of exciting moments. It's full of tension. Particularly the end game is, like, I think the main difference between Seven Wonders Duel to me and Lord of the Rings Duel, where the end game, if you're very tight, you don't know what cards are going to come. Is it going to be a card that gives me 6 points, which is versus the card that gives you 7 points, and that 1 point will be the difference, or that 2 points will be the difference between you winning and me losing. And that, counting the points at the end, I think it's what makes a little bit better game, Seven Wonders Duel. Like, if you don't win by any of the other conditions, you have to rely on the cards and maybe the cards that you got at the beginning, which are just pure victory points. So, Seven Wonders Duel, not Lord of the Rings Duel, with or without expansions, fantastic game going into the collection. Yes or no, Jonas?
You're putting me into a really tough spot. Seven Wonders Duel. Because I've only played the Lord of the Rings version with you in real life. I played Seven Wonders Duel on Board Game Arena.
Mm.
And I liked it. It's a nice game. But the last time we played Lord of the Rings, I was kind of also feeling that, hey, I've seen what Seven Wonders Duel has to offer. And I'm wondering if it will have, like, do I have another 20 games of Seven Wonders Duel in me? I'm not sure. So I'm like super hesitant. And I kind of want to say yes. So that you would say yes to my suggestions as well. So I don't come off as like just shooting your favorites out from the gate. But okay, I have to be honest to myself. I have to be true to myself. I don't think I have 20 more games of Seven Wonders Duel in me. And therefore...
I think before you say anything that you will regret for the rest of your life, Jonas, I think this game, when you start playing it against somebody that you are competitive, like let's say if you and me start playing it, you will realize that you have 30, 40, 50 more games of Seven Wonders Duel in you. Because then you want to win. And it's easy enough that you're like, damn it. Okay, let's play again. Or next time I'll win. And that's the tension that the game brings. Like it's so enjoyable to actually try to be competitive in this game against somebody that you know and that you want to beat in a game. And I think that's the main difference between playing it in seven. Like I've also played in Board Game Arena. But like the most enjoyment of this game that I had is just playing it against one of my best friends and just like heckling, like just cheering loudly after you win and the other person loses and be like, okay, now you're the loser. And then just having that interaction, I think that's what makes this game also like super enjoyable. And that tension that like is just sometimes it's just like you're about to win and then the other person gets the card that lets them win. And you're like, I don't know. I think if we played it together, you would have a million more.
How deep do the strategies go?
I think, so the first times I played the game, I would keep winning like so with some strategy that maybe my friend would miss. Like either the scientific or the military. Like, and I like they would maybe try to focus just in one strategy and suddenly like, oh, you focused on that one. Then I went through the other way and I won. I think once you start playing the game or like once you understand all of the strategies, it really depends on the cards that are there. It's very tactical. So like if you have the chance to go, try to go and pressure in the scientific victory, you do that. If that's not the cards that you have because the other player took them away from you, then you start pushing on the military. And then if neither of those are options, you just balance it out and then just start investing in like victory points for the end of the game. So there's obviously three ways of winning the game, right? Like either with the expansions, there's a few others. It's really tactical, depending on the cards that are there, depending even on the symbols, depending on the wonders that are available, you have to kind of change your strategy. If you start going into the meta, there's cards or wonders that like people prefer because they're more powerful, absolute terms, but I see that it really depends on the combination of things.
Three different ways of winning. I don't know if it's going to be enough for me. I'm so sorry. I have to give a no to this one. It hurts me.
Oh.
If only it would be an infinite collection, then I would have no problem. But this is a fantasy collection, Louis. We have to take this very seriously.
Oh my God. And this is the one that I thought was an easy pick.
Okay.
So get ready for the other two.
All right. Let me win you over. Let me win you over.
Nope.
El Grande is my suggestion as our second game to the collection. Okay. Why do we need El Grande? Again, it's not something both of us can play together. And I think this is a point that you did not touch in your review. I think generally El Grande is considered to be a five-player game. I've only played five-player El Grande. So it's very limited. But it's also like, it's the best area control game. This is the game that will be the magnet at the meetup that we were going to. Kind of like showing like, okay, but yeah, we like raw. We like medium games. We like light games. We like interactive games. But hey, we really like area control games. And if you want to play El Grande with us, we will be there for you every week, every month. El Grande, what do you say, Luis?
That's cheating. You know, I already just said that it's one of my favorite like games. Well, I didn't say it is one of my favorite games. And it's, of course, I'm going to accept El Grande.
Nice.
Of course, I'm going to accept El Grande. I was even going to suggest it myself, but now I don't need
to. No, you don't have to. You get to suggest more games.
All right. I'm going to do my second suggestion, and I'm pretty sure this is going to be contentious. All right. Jonas, imagine yourself a box, a black box with a little bit of silver. You open the box, and you see some colorful cards. You see a board that is weird, but flashy. And you see yourself an economic game for four players where the supply and demand affects the entire game. My suggestion for you, four-player game, the unsung hero of 2023, Kutna Hora, the City of Silver. And I know, that's why I said, I thought Seven Wonders was a deal, but I guess I'm going to get all of my games vetoed, but this is a game that does not get the recognition that it deserves. This is a game that every time I played, I had an amazing time. It's full of tough decisions. It's full of good interaction, people fighting for victory points at the end of the game, people fighting for locations. I think this is a game that should be played more and should be presented to more people. And the game is beautiful. You have to admit that. And Rewood, I think maybe the first game, I don't know for sure, but one of the first games that used Rewood, the recyclable wood materials that look like plastic and smell delicious. But not delicious, but super good.
What's the pitch for Kutnohara? I know it's a fantastic game. I know there is interaction. What's the setting where we would be playing Kutnohara? Is it just for me and you?
No, definitely. It could be for me and you. I have never played this game at two players. I've only played at three and four. Basically, any setting where you want a little bit heavier game. Maybe this is you, me,
don't,
Sheila. Me,
don't
me,
don't
me,
say I, any setting, because any setting is like, then it's like, if it is for everyone, then it's for no one.
No, but like, that's the point, right? Like, this is a game that if you want a good strategic game where you have to take control of your actions, think a little bit about what you want to do, think a little bit about what strategy based on maybe the setup or like the cards that you have, this is the game. Like, this is, it's also, there's a little bit of luck involved, but not a lot. There's like that supply and demand, which you have to consider, like other people playing affects what you're doing. So it's definitely not a multiplayer solitaire.
No.
Other people taking your minds or different areas of the board. I don't know. I think this is a game that either one person comes visit, like, hey, let's play a little bit heavier game. Either us four together with Sheila and Mia, we're playing, or we're presenting this game to like other members of our random group. And like, hey, like, come, look at this game. This is a game that you have never seen before. Look at this card mechanism, that supply and demand thing. Like, people will be amazed. And the more I play it, the more I like this game. And nobody ever talks about this game.
I've been thinking about Kutnohara the past weeks. Ever since we discussed about this episode, I knew that you're going to come with Kutnohara. And okay, for me, Kutnohara is not in my personal top 50. It might be my personal top 100. But even then, like, there's just, I enjoy playing Kutnohara. I do not think it needs any more highlighting or any more appreciation that it does. So from that perspective, I cannot introduce it to our fantasy collection if I would just think about, you know, whether it is underrated or overrated game.
You don't think it's underrated?
I don't think it is underrated. I think it got featured plenty enough.
Not at all, my friend. Not at all. It got mentioned and forgotten. Even Shut Up and Sit Down sometimes says nowadays that SETI is the best thing that CGE has come out in years. Kutnohara came a year ago and nobody talks about it. Everybody forgets it. Nobody plays it.
I like Kutnohara from this perspective that it introduces supply and demand mechanic. There's like those couple of moments where it like breaks a little bit, but even then it doesn't like break the whole game. So I really appreciated it introducing something new to this like efficiency puzzle genre, but it's just not enough.
Think about the income action. You have to take your income depending on what you have.
That's a minus. Don't try to sell Kutnohara to me with that income action.
Income action? My friend, you have had bad income actions if you think income action is bad. Or sometimes that frustration of like, I need to take the income action now. And damn, I wish I could take it two turns later, but like, I need the money now or I will get hurt on the next turn. Then like, that is the beauty of the game. Like, sometimes you have to take actions that are like, okay, I have to do this action now. Otherwise, things might happen. And I think that tension is very, like, very nice. It's what makes this game also like super interesting. Frustrating, but like super good.
I love the income action. I have no complaints against the income action. It's just that that's not the action that makes Kutnohara stand out. Income action is not the action. It is that supply demand stuff. It is a little bit like looking over like what are other people doing.
It's everything. Everything, Jonas.
And it's still a no.
Damn, you will be remembered as the naysayer in this episode. But to be fair, I kind of expected that you would say no. I thought you would actually talk worse things about Kutnohara. But whatever, you're lost.
Yeah.
And our future friends in these hypothetical scenarios lost, thanks to you, Jonas.
So I'm thinking about which game I'm going to bring up as the third, because I've now like shut two of your games down. So I know you are feeling salty at the moment. Therefore, there's like a couple games that, man, if you're going to like veto them, I'm going to feel so bad. So I'm not sure I want to push those forward.
You should push us. This is the moment to push us forward. Hey, I'm going to bring back Kutnahora to this list when you play it once more. I'm going to bring back Seven Wonders Duel once we play it. You'll change your mind because I'm right. You're wrong.
Are you willing to forgive me? The next game I'm going to suggest, or like me vetoing two of your games, has nothing to do.
Has
not
nothing
affect
to,
your judgment.
No, not at all. Because also, what if I say, yeah, no, I will veto it no matter what, and then you bring out an amazing game? No, Jonas, I will not prevent our future hypothetical friends from having great games. I'm not you.
Okay, imagine this. We have gone to the meetup. We have made some friends. We made some other friends from other circuits, social circles as well, in this new town or in this new environment where we are in. And we want to have a fun night out at the pub.
Mm-hmm.
What is a better game to play at this pub than Strike?
There's not many better games to play. Hey, you don't need to say anything. We're adding Strike to the list. I wish you had said another game, because I was also thinking about adding Strike to the list. I didn't. I decided, nah, like Strike, maybe it's too simple. But at the same time, we have talked about it before. It's like, it's a game that you feel it's silly, too silly sometimes to bring. I think you mentioned something like that in one of the previous episodes, like that you feel silly just for suggesting it. Mm. But once you start playing, it's just like, hey, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it is hypnotic.
It is hypnotic. So yeah, no, you don't need to sell me. I am, as always, the more rational part of this duo by saying yes to Strike.
Thank you. Okay, so what do we got in the collection? Ra, El Grande, Strike.
And nothing.
And nothing else. Or there might be a fourth game. Let's see, Luis, if you can suggest something a little bit better.
All right, Jonas, this is the setting. Now, we are in this hypothetical new city.
We are now in the city, or are we running this company of doing the events?
We have been doing both, but I've been trying to sell it to you in the hypothetical city, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, you say like, hey, Jonas, to run these events, we need Seven Wonders Duel.
Yeah, of course, like because the events will be company-wide, right? So it's not going to be just one table playing. It's going to be multiple tables, and there's going to be people like, hey, I want to just play against my boss. And they're like, oh, Seven Wonders Duel. But no. No, because it's not in our hypothetical company. But we're in the city. We are going to have a game night with some friends. Suddenly, everybody falls sick and we have to cancel. And I get super sick and I have to cancel. And you are eager to play a game. You are dying to play a game, but you are by yourself. What better game to have, Jonas, in your collection than Final Girl?
I have not even played Final Girl. Sell Final Girl to me. Make me choose a game for the fantasy collection that I have not even played.
All right, Jonas. Listen, this is a fantastic. Now, the only bad thing about Final Girl is that I think you need to have several boxes of Final Girl, which are not that expensive, but each one of these boxes, which are called feature films, I think are around 20 euros or 15 to 20 euros or something. And I think playing one single box can end up being quite repetitive. As fun as it could be, like I play now the first scenario like several times. I'm like, maybe I need to change a little bit next time I play Final Girl. It is a game that if you like solo games, do you like solo games, Jonas?
Tough luck,
because everybody's sick in this hypothetical scenario. You have to play a solo game and the internet's down.
Okay.
Sorry. So what are you going to do? You're going to go into our collection, and are you going to find Final Girl, Jonas, in the collection? Are you?
Hey, I do not object the idea of having a solo game in the collection. It's just that I cannot pick a solo game for a fantasy collection that I have not played before. I know you like it, but there's like, I have not played it. I don't know if I will like it or not.
You have to trust me. And hey, I'm going to tell you, we can alter the fantasy collection later, right?
Yes.
Once it gets to a certain number, what number we're going to say, then we'll start to kick some games, especially if the collection is full of your games, because you're saying no to all of my games. I'm going to start kicking out some of your games from the collection. But for now, Final Girl, yes or no?
It has to be a no. I have to play the game before I can introduce it to the accepted for the fantasy.
Okay,
collection.
That is my bad.
I should
have thought about that.
Do you remember, if you think about that, when you started this segment, you were talking about that, okay, these are also going to be games that both of us can kind of like give the recommendation, right? These are like games that we both agree on that are great.
Yeah, but like, it's like Ra, right?
Yeah.
I played it once. I know it's good. I know it's good. I trust you. Therefore, it goes in the collection. I don't need to play it a million times.
How about one time?
How about trust me? Fair enough. You will be remembered as a naysayer, and I should have thought about it. And honestly, I thought you would say no, but I don't know what I was thinking. So I had other games proposed, but I decided Final Girl was going to be the option. Hey, at least now I know that you have to play a game before you recommend it. Who would have thought? So there you have it, everyone. Now we have the first three games added to the collection, which are Ra, El Grande, and Strike. If you have never played these games, we really strongly recommend you to give them a try. All of these games are available in the stores. Most of them are available in new versions. Well, I don't know, Strike. Strike perhaps is the least
Strike,
available.
You can get Strike. You can find Strike.
But yeah, definitely give them a try. And that is all for this episode. Thank you very much for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Like I mean.